Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
The NCAA football season rolls on week 10 for some of the conferences, but for the Pac-12, it's week 1. Welcome everybody to Believe in the Pac-12 football along with Ryan Leaf. My name is Jonathan Rifkin, back for another season of Pac-12 football where we will get you covered on all things going on the West Coast in the Power 5 conference. Ryan, it's been a while since we caught up, my man. How's it going? What's been going on in the hills of Hollywood, we'll call it?
Well, a lot of preschool teaching. That's what's been my life for the last. My last job in sports really was March 11th in Norman, Oklahoma, covering Jalen Hurts' pro day. We've seen how that all played out—a draft, yeah. Accord, but everything else got shut down, and the Pac-12, of course, wasn't supposed to play. And here we are going into this weekend with the first week of ball for the Pac-12 conference, trying to make themselves a part of the equation if and when the College Football Playoff Committee decides to pick a Final Four when this is all said and done.
I think that we should start there because we'll go over the schedule, we'll talk about the teams, and maybe give our prediction both for the week and maybe throughout the Pac-12 season. But going into the Pac-12 season with Week 10 being abundant for the SEC, the Big 12, and the ACC, amongst obviously some teams who have had to reschedule or cancel games, the Pac-12 doesn't look like they're in a position to get a team into the college football playoff, and it may be even harder for them to be convincingly get a team into a really good bowl outside. Obviously, they have to get a team in the Rose Bowl, depending on who the champion is. But in terms of convincing fashion, I mean, regardless of the team, what needs to happen in this conference to give the national committee some confidence in a Pac-12 team to maybe give them the benefit of the doubt? And we could go over the ACC, we can go over the SEC and the different scenarios, maybe Ohio State, but who knows with the strength of schedule. Is the Big 12 going to be strong enough? Probably not to get a team in at this point. What needs to happen in the Pac-12?
I think they have to have an undefeated team. It's just not, the sample size is going to be too small in comparison to that. They more than welcome taking a one-loss SEC team who played 11 games over a seven-game season. Now, if you go 7-0 and win the conference, I think that actually for the committee is going to give you an opportunity to crash that party, and I think rightfully so. I do. If you're able to go 7-0 in this crammed season, means A, you got through all 7 weeks without any COVID-related postponements, because they're not allowable. When you've decided to play 7 consecutive weeks, kind of like the Big Ten's doing, you're watching what Wisconsin's going through. Wisconsin's a very good football team. And because they're not going to play 2 games and not have them remade, you know, if they're sitting there at 6-0, do they get in with a win over Ohio State in the Big Ten championship? I don't know. They have to get in, I would think, but you never know. When you're talking about this virus and the effects, if a team's able to go undefeated in the Pac-12, get through it all, win all their games, win the championship, I definitely think they get a look from the committee.
There's going to be teams that don't win, that don't lose games, excuse me, that end up getting shafted out of the college football playoff. We know that. Also, Cincinnati, I feel like, needs to be put in the conversation at this point, right? If they go undefeated, they're number 7 right now in the country. Do they get the benefit of the doubt because Oklahoma State and Oklahoma are not going to be convincing enough out of the Big 12? Obviously, with what we've seen this season, the Pac-12 won't be convincing enough. Maybe something crazy. I don't think that a 6-0 Wisconsin team with their schedule is going to have enough credibility to make it. Right? You're not going to make everybody happy. Notre Dame and Clemson, what do you do with those two teams? And I know you and I sort of had our little Twitter back and forth last week about it. I don't want to count out Notre Dame. I'm giving them a little bit more of the benefit of the doubt. I think Ian Book's overrated. I think their secondary is actually decent. Opening game of the season, they gave Duke way more of a chance than they shouldn't. They've hunkered down since then. We'll see what happens this upcoming Saturday against Clemson. But no matter what, not everybody's going to be happy. A 7-1 Ohio State team hold more water than a 7-0 Pac-12 team?
For the committee and for people who are watching around the country, unless it's a 7-0 team that's won their games by an average of like 20 points or something like that, I would say yes. It just it's just the world we live in. Ohio State's a brand name. You know, it'd be really hard. If USC is 7-0 and they look really darn good, Keaton Slovis has lit it up again, you know, they may get the benefit of the doubt because guess what? They're USC.
Right.
Oregon starting to trend in that direction. I don't have a lot of confidence in Oregon being able to duplicate what they did a year ago, replacing so much, even though Mario Cristobal has been able to recruit. So I think it's going to be difficult. I think if you're undefeated at 7-0, I think you get in over a Cincinnati team. I think you get in over a BYU team. I think you get in over any other undefeated team outside of the Power Five. I think it's going to be really hard for Cincinnati BYU to crash the party. It just is. I'd take a one-loss Oklahoma State team versus Cincinnati in a game in a matchup. I'd pick Oklahoma State, you know, 9 times out of 10 in that. So it's tough, you know, being from the Group of Five, having to deal with that, you know, chip on your shoulder, little kid on the block. But it is what it is. I've said for a while there should be a Group of Five Final Four, you know, and let them battle. And I think it would be just as entertaining and fun. But it is what it is, and I just think they get left out once again.
It's going to be really interesting to see how this shakes up, of course. Pac-12 Commissioner Larry Scott earlier this year, back in late August, early September, when there were whispers that maybe the Pac-12 would follow the Big Ten and try and reinstate a season, that they wanted an expansion. And obviously, Kevin Warren, the commissioner of the Big Ten, was on board, and no other commissioner was on board. Greg Sankey ultimately shutting it down, as well as the National Committee. So that didn't end up happening. If it was going to happen, I feel like this would have been the season to let it happen, which shows that maybe it is time to start separating and balancing the power between the Group of Five and the Power Five. And that may be, Ryan, the Pac-12 adopting a couple more teams.
Well, this would be the year. But the problem for me would be it would be hard to put the genie back in the bottle. And I think that's the fear, setting precedent and then seeing some success, like seeing a Pac-12 team that's getting its 8th and 9th games and just really kind of coming to the forefront then and winning, and maybe them coming in as a 6th seed and winning the thing. You know, I think that would open up a lot of eyes to, like, hey, you know, a year from now, this needs to be a 6-team or an 8-team tournament. And I don't think the committee wants that. They like the elitism of the Final Four, the four that make it. I think that the four that are in are elite. They are. And there's a team maybe that on any given Saturday could beat one of those four. But I think overall, for the majority of the time, we've gotten the best four teams into the playoff since its inception. And I feel like the best team has been the national champion.
Yeah, of course, the last 14 of 15 national champions have come out of the SEC. I don't think that's going to happen this year. I don't think anybody can touch Clemson with or without Trevor Lawrence. We'll get into, I'm sure, those conversations at some point. But the schedule is going to be packed this Saturday, starting at 9 a.m. on the West Coast time, with USC hosting Arizona State. USC found themselves at 25th in the Week 3 poll. Since then, they've been boosted up to number 20, up to Week 10 before playing a game.
All they have to do is not play, and they just keep moving up. I love it.
It's the Clay Helton effect. Don't get on the field, and maybe it will give you a...
Do not give anybody anything that may possibly make you go, ooh,
yeah,
and then you're fine. You'll be in the top 10 because you're USC before you know it.
Exactly. Don't give us any reason to doubt. So USC will kick it off at 9 a.m. The day ends at a 7:30. Actually, two 7:30 games, with Washington State at Oregon State. I guess technically Jonathan Smith is not a new head coach. He's in his second year now, his penultimate year. But Nick Rolovich, of course, your guy up at Washington State, will be making his Pac-12 coaching debut. And then the day will end with Washington at Cal. Always a fantastic matchup between those two teams. In the middle, Arizona at Utah, UCLA, Colorado, Stanford at Oregon. Okay, so let's start with USC hosting Arizona State. It's great that this is on Fox, because it finally puts the spotlight, being on Big Noon, in a prime slot for the Pac-12 with my dark horse underdog team, Arizona State. I love Jaden Daniels. I think he's fantastic. I love their wide receiving core. Recruiting has gone well. Herm has cooking down there, USC. We'll get into that. What are your thoughts on this matchup now, being at 9 a.m.?
Well, you kind of glossed over that. People are pissed. People are pissed that this is kicking off at 9 a.m. Pacific. And I was a huge proponent a year ago. I remember when we were really talking about it when I was doing College Football Live on ESPN, and And I was all for it. I talked about how the year.
You're an early bird, though. You're an early bird.
But our team went 97. We were going to the Rose Bowl, but no one knew who the hell we were. And we went out and played the University of Illinois at 9 a.m. Pacific. All right. It was body clock time. I don't care what people are saying. We watched Cal go do it at Ole Miss last year. Yeah. I covered that game. This, I think, is huge, right? You're going to put the big noon kickoff game for Fox that usually gets Ohio State, Oklahoma, Texas game, the Red River rivalry. This is huge. You got probably one of the best up-and-coming teams in the Pac-12 in Arizona State. Jaden Daniels, you talked about it. Herm Edwards and that staff have recruited and made them a contender. This is going to be his second season in this offense and what he needs to do. Well, it'll be his first season in this offense, but his second season playing. I think this is a great matchup. Keaton Slovis, that offense, that team in USC, they have a chance for the whole country to see how good they are. I think this is a prime spot for the conference to kick off, and I'm glad Fox did it. I love seeing ESPN come in late for ESPN After Dark, Pac-12 After Dark doing Cal Washington, which has been a great football game the last two seasons. So it's a great slate of football. The Pac-12 have done a tremendous job of preparing their players and their coaches, and they've been really safe in how they've gone about this. I thought they've been the most stringent. It's taken the longest, but you know, for a guy who doesn't really think football should be being played at all right now, I'm happy that the Pac-12 has kind of led the way in terms of true safety and how they've gone about things.
I agree with the safety side. I don't agree with how they handled their staffing with all the 88 furloughs and a month before Larry Scott giving out bonuses, not to mention the fact that they're paying $5.7 million for that lease up in San Francisco. So I agree with you.
It's so nice.
I don't care how nice it is. The Pac-12 network sucks. They put $1.2 billion on collateral, and then they decided to play football and lay off 88 staffers, including your good friend Mike Yam, which, bless his heart, is at the NFL Network now. But it was so unprecedented for the conference to do that.
And how about they're not gonna be showing any games this year?
Good. They don't deserve to. They don't deserve to.
How crazy is that? How crazy is it there's a network and they will not show any games this season?
They need to sell it to ESPN. It's time to move on. It's time to move on from that. It's ridiculous. Okay, I tweeted out as a joke, Hugh Freeze to USC. I'm on that bandwagon. I love what he's doing at Liberty. It's just a joke for people. I offended somebody, I'm sure, somewhere. Clay, I think that the waiting game with Clay Helton, I think that Mike Bone was a good addition for USC. Puts them in a good spot. We could sing Keaton Slovis' praises all day. Coming up with Kurt Warner out in Arizona. My laundry just finished, if you just heard that buzzer. And, I mean, look, after Ja'Marr Chase and the LSU wide receiving core opted out, I think that leaves USC with the best wide receiving tandem in the nation. You could tell me if I'm wrong, but I think Tyler Fonz and Amon-Ra St. Brown are unbelievable, and I don't know why. And look, Drake London came around last year, too. So I think that you pair the wide receiving core, the skill players, with Keaton Slovis and his progression, I mean, that is a scary offense. The question now is, as it has been the last few years, is the defense going to hold up? And look, it seems like offensively, USC is sort of innovating, right? They're still running sort of that half air raid offense. But now everybody's a little more seasoned and they're returning their core wide receivers. So I don't know how they would lose this game. I love Arizona State. I just think it's a little premature to think that they're going to be able to win this game. I think Arizona State gives me 2015 Golden State Warrior vibes, where they're going to be really good and they're going to have some really good wins, but you can tell that they're peaking a little bit too early. And after like maybe one more year, I think that they'll be in contention for this conference.
Great in making an evergreen podcast today, going back referencing the 2015 Golden State Warriors. this USC team is, I think, going to be so good offensively that it doesn't matter what their defense looks like. I think they win a ton of shootouts this year. They just are not going to, they're going to outscore everybody in the Pac-12. I think they have the best chance of anybody of being undefeated when this is all said and done. There may be a really good team that they play in the Pac-12 championship that's gotten better all year long and builds a defense that may be able to, you know, go blow to blow with them. I just don't know if a team's going to be able to outscore them. And that's the biggest question. We'll see what Herm Edwards and that defense brings to the table on Saturday morning. But I love that, boom, right out the gate, first thing in the morning, right after college game day is over, we're on Fox, and the Pac-12 is getting a front and center spot for everybody to see.
Yeah, it's much needed. All right, so do you have a score prediction for this game, Mr. Leaf?
I'm going to go 42-24 USC. Maybe 42-31. I'm going to change that. I'm going to go 42-31 USC.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be high scoring. Take the over, people. I don't even know what the spread is on this game, but
it's 10.5. It's 10.5, and that my score actually gives you USC minus 10.5, 42-31.
Oh, so you're begging people to push. I would take whatever the over is, I'm taking it, but I think it's going to be a little bit closer. I think it's going to be like 42-35. Something. I think it's going to be like a touchdown win for USC.
You're taking Arizona State and the points and running.
Yeah, I'll take the points and run. I still think SC is going to pull it out. And I'm not buying points on that game. So yeah, I mean, it'll be a fun game though, for sure. And it's at the Coliseum. Not that I don't think home field will matter as much. I think that weather will matter for teams that aren't used to playing in bad weather when in terms of home field, but I don't think because without crowds in the Pac-12, it's going to matter too much. I mean, what's your take on that? Do you think that, yeah, there's a sense of like familiarity with your home field, but without the crowd, how much of an impact do you think that's going to have on some of these away teams?
I think it's super limited. In fact, I think you're going to see a lot of road teams winning because a home field advantage plays a huge effect in the Pac-12 in terms of what stadiums get filled and get loud, like Washington and Oregon. You know, you go to the Farm at Stanford and road teams have so much more success there because no one's there, right? USC has been much better lately filling that place. You know,
the Rose Bowl's terrible.
UCLA and the Rose Bowl's been terrible. It's gonna be like normal for them. They're not gonna hear anything, you know. So
they won't have the opposing fans booing them.
Utah, right? That Rice-Eccles is loud. It shakes, and it won't be that. So I think you see a lot of road teams come in and maybe normally are a 3-point dog because of the home field advantage. I think that makes it more of a straight up football game.
All right, let's move on here. 12:30 ESPN2. Utah will be hosting Arizona. I read an article in the Arizona Tribune talking about how Arizona is going to be slept on this year. I don't think that that's the case. I think that Arizona has one, maybe two wins in them. Utah is going to be a big question mark, I think, because number one, they were able to flip a really big four-star recruit from Ohio State and Brandon Clark Phillips the third, from Ohio State on national signing day to Utah. He's the biggest recruit ever to Utah. He's going to lock down that defense. I had him on my show back in August, my recruiting show. He's awesome. I think that he's going to make an impact defensively, filling up some of those holes, but offensively, Ryan, what do we expect to see out of Utah? Because right now, we have Drew Lisk, we have Jake Bentley, we have Cameron Rising. What I've heard is that Drew Lisk, the redshirt senior, is in place to at least start this game. But he could be competing with grad transfer Jake Bentley. Offensively, we've seen 2 and 3 stars get turned into 5 stars or 4 stars under this Kyle Whittingham offense. Do we expect him to find the guy early on this season and then be able to elevate their game to the point of contention?
It's one of the first times that Kyle Whittingham really hasn't had a quarterback going into the first game of the season. And, you know, so 2020, a lot of these teams that we're going to be talking about the rest of this show, you know, haven't decided on their quarterback or are keeping it a secret going into it because there's been so much turnover at the quarterback position, especially at the high level. You know, Tyler Huntley was about as good as you can get last year for the Utah Utes. So, you know, Jake Bentley coming from the SEC, his ability to play in big games, but he lost his job to a freshman who came in who couldn't win his job this year. So that says a lot to me. So Kyle Whittingham's going to place the best guy out there that's not going to make mistakes, going to be a leader, going to be a kind of a game manager, and then he's going to rely on his physical style of play. And for Arizona, you know, great quarterback play is going to be the key, and I think they found their guy. But you know, I'm with you. I think they're a 2-4 team heading into that championship weekend. However, they're going to play. You know, maybe they can find a third win by then. But I'm looking at their schedule. I see them possibly a win against UCLA and Colorado.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. Even then, who knows? Colorado's so funky, man. At that point, Colorado might have it figured out. Who knows?
I don't know.
I mean, you say Grant Gunnell. You think that Grant Gunnell is the guy at Arizona? You think that he'll?
They believe he is. Okay. And you know, with Khalil Tate and how dynamic and great he was, his redshirt freshman year.
Yep.
Kevin Sumlin, you know, for me, he hasn't been what people would consider the quarterback whisperer that people thought he was, right? I mean, you've had these quarterbacks like Kyler Murray and Kyle Allen just, you know, up and leave. You know, his last great quarterback, I truly believe, was Johnny Manziel. And that was, you know, that was a train wreck there too. And they did not get along or anything like that. So if he feels like he's found his quarterback, and he had flashes last year where he showed his ability, you know, and he fits someone's offense much differently than the likes of Khalil Tate. So I think he gives him the best chance. It's going to be difficult for them to come out of the South. It just is, you know, like I said, 2-4, I think Utah ultimately finds a way to win this game. They're 14 point favorites. I don't bet on anything this weekend, hardly, when it comes to the Pac-12, because we have no idea, but it sounds pretty relevant to what we're thinking. I would probably take, I'd stay as far away from this game as possible when you're picking it, but I think Utah wins for sure.
Yeah, I agree. Speaking of Kevin Sumlin, 6-7 back in 2018, his first year. Last year, only 4 wins. This being his third season, if he can't get it done, is he on the chopping blocks?
I don't think any coaches are on the chopping blocks this year. I just really don't. I don't think with the economic situation a lot of these schools are in, I don't know if athletic directors, unless they can get some crazy donor to come in and say, hey, I'll pay all the buyout and everything like that, which some of these schools have amazing, you know, unbelievable donors like that, USC being one of them. But I just don't know how you justify it in the time of a pandemic to go.
Oh, it's time to wake release. Up.
That's time to eat food is what it is.
Even better.
I don't know if you are able to get rid of a coach this year. I think this is, you know, it's as one coach told me a week ago, this is a throwaway year. We can have fun. We can play true freshmen out the gate, see what they're doing. This season doesn't count against their eligibility. It's almost on steroids redshirt rule that they talked about.
Here's the problem, and I'm looking at this now from a recruiting perspective. Look at a school like Texas. Texas has not been very good. Texas has been going through a lot of adversity with Tom Herman. Offensively, they have not looked great. They haven't been able to figure out their defense. They lost 3 of their 4 blue chip recruits over the last month. To me, if there's a better coach out there, and Hugh Freeze is my favorite example, because he's not going to be at Liberty for very long. He's not, right? It's sort of the Scott Satterfield complex, because Appalachian State, now he's at Louisville. I see that if there is a really good coach out there, a high-valued coach as an asset, why it's not about canning the coach that you have because they did a bad job, but it's about maybe making that upgrade, because we are seeing that this season is impacting a potential future for some of these teams like Texas, right? LSU just had 2 opt-outs and a flip to Florida. And I do think that the circumstances of this season are impacting that, whether or not you can blame the coach. I mean, I probably would blame Tom Herman over at Texas, because Texas
depends
should
on what
be
the
able
buyout
to keep
is for me. It depends on what the buyout is for me. That, I mean, if you've got an expiring contract, but if you got millions and millions of dollars, it's going to be hard to justify that to schools that are laying off sports, getting rid of sports, things like that. It's going to be really difficult to justify that. Now, hey, don't get me wrong. Football has had like the least accountabilities you can imagine when it comes to like, hey, we know we're the star. We put the food on the table. You do what we tell you to do. Or we'll just take away your sport.
All right.
They've been very fortunate because they're the money generating sport out there. So, I mean, they can, I just don't know if the optics are great, but clearly, you know, I don't think optics has mattered too much. I think it's starting to matter a little bit more in terms of what we're going through in the world, but you know, it wouldn't shock me at all if a coach is gone and they've, you know, maybe, to your point, it may be an opportunity for them to get rid of someone and bring in a guy that's kind of under the radar, not pay him a lot of money, let him build and work his ass off to make it into something special. You know, we'll see. But I don't know if another, if a 2-4 season for him, you know, sends him out the door. I think a lot of things are going to be brought into the equation because of what we've gone through for the last 7 months.
Two games down, four to go. We have USC beating Arizona State. We have Utah beating Arizona. Let's move on to the Rudy Poo Bowl of the day, if you will. Colorado hosting UCLA at 4 o'clock. That's Pacific time, obviously. Give that hour over to the Mountain time for all you Mountain folks. UCLA is going to be bad. UCLA is going to be really bad. I still love Chip Kelly. It pains me to see that, you know, another school that I keep telling people, oh, wait a couple years, let the recruiting class come in, let the Chip Kelly complex take its thing, and eventually it'll work out. The problem is that coronavirus happened, and the coronavirus doesn't care about the Chip Kelly complex, and I don't think that UCLA is any better than they were when they brought the guy. Yeah, they had Park McQuarrie, some guy from New Hampshire who honestly is completely overrated coming in next year. But other than that, this team this year, they lost Joshua Kelly. I don't know anybody that's going to be sufficient enough to really replace the production that he brought. Do you even see UCLA? Do you see UCLA being worse than Arizona?
No, because of the continuity. I just think that Chip Kelly's been there. It's third year DTR. He's coming back for his third year with them. And that for me is huge in that offense, his ability. And you saw offensively what they were able to do a bit last year. And I think if you're going to look at this truncated season, and anytime you have the continuity factor, offensive coordinator, head coach, quarterback, all those things coming back, I think that's going to play a big factor in terms of them being able to win some games. You know, I don't think they're going to be great, but they're going up against a Colorado team that's playing a shifted safety as their quarterback. I wouldn't be surprised if we see the triple option out of them this weekend. And it would be strange with Darren Shiverini's, you know, offense and the talent of LaVisca Chenault a year ago. So I think they win this football game. It may be one of the only ones they win. But again, another scenario where if it was a full season and they were to go 3-9 like they did the last 2 years, essentially, there'd be a good chance Chip Kelly might be out of there. But I don't think it's going to happen with what the season looks like.
Yeah, I don't know if Chip Kelly will be out after the season. I agree. So you talk about Colorado. It looks like Jarek Broussard out of Bishop Lynch High School in Dallas, Texas, will be the starter. He has played both cornerback and running back. He dressed for two games in his freshman season. Last year, he injured his knee and missed the entire season. So it's going to be interesting to see his development. It's going to be a long development. I agree with you. I think that, look, Air Force, is not too far away in Colorado Springs. Maybe they, you know, call and ask for a copy of that playbook, run that triple option, and just try to rack up the yards. UCLA's defensive front seven hasn't been historically very good, at least in the recent, I shouldn't say historical, in recent memory, UCLA's front seven hasn't been phenomenal. So who
knows?
You're
12 years old, so you know, your history is,
Why is it that everybody that I work with in this industry, I get told
How
that.
How old are you?
I'm 23.
You're 23,
I'm
right?
I'm 23.
I'm twice your age. So let's just calm down.
I don't know if you're trying to put me down or if you're insulting yourself.
No, I'm a handsome 44-year-old. Oh, I look like I'm 34.
Yeah, and my hairline makes it look like I'm 30. All right, you have Colorado losing to UCLA. We have Utah over Arizona and USC over Arizona State. Oregon hosting Stanford. Stanford's gone through. Oh, actually, you know what? I want to say something about Colorado really quickly. So Mel Tucker pulled a Willie Taggart on Colorado last year. He wasn't as egregious about leaving Colorado as Willie Taggart was about leaving Oregon. Now Willie Taggart, you know, screwed up at Florida State and he's at FAU leeching off of what Lane Kiffin left for him. But I think that Colorado's actually in better hands. Michigan State 1-1, lost to Rutgers to open the season, did beat Michigan last week, which is crazy, but I don't know. I'm not so confident about Mel Tucker at Michigan State. So Colorado, I don't know what's happening with you in terms of players, but personnel-wise, I think that Shiverini is actually going to be a really good coach. We'll see what happens with the development of that program. Okay, Oregon, Stanford. Stanford cut 11 sports. Football was not one of them during coronavirus. They went from like 35 down to 24. Oregon's ranked number 12. Too high or too low off the bat, Ryan Leaf?
I think it's just about right. Okay, let's just say that. I think it's just about right in terms of where they're at because of their success from a year ago, but they are replacing so much, right? That the whole offensive line. Now, Penei Sewell was supposed to come back, but he opted out. So this whole offensive line needs to be replaced. The quarterback, an offensive coordinator who's gone on to be the head coach at UNLV, although I think that might be a good thing, to be honest with you.
I agree.
And then defensively, they lost three quarters of their defensive backfield. Brady Breeze, the Rose Bowl MVP, is opted out. So, you know, it's a lot to ask. Stanford and Shaw are consistency. Davis Mills comes back, and they thought he was so good that they let KJ Costello go down to Mississippi State and crash and burn, even though he's the all-time leading passer.
Is it him or is it Mike Leach? Who's crashing and burning?
Both.
Right?
They went out into the water together and they lit themselves on fire.
And the crazy thing is that LSU is terrible, so that opening win is not even impressive.
It's impressive. I mean, throwing for 600 yards against an LSU team is impressive. Yeah, I don't care who you are.
Look at this. LSU put up 11 points last week.
It doesn't matter. Go throw for 600 yards against an LSU team.
I can't throw for 2 yards against the LSU team, Ryan.
That's absurd. No one's ever done it.
LSU has 8 potential NFL players on their defense, and that's how bad that they were in that game.
Right. So that's
fair enough.
He's not, and Costello probably not going to play much the rest of the year, which is crazy. So Davis Mills apparently was the guy. And if he is the guy, this game is going to be much more entertaining than a lot of people probably wanted to be or assumed it was going to be with Oregon.
Yeah, they have Jack West, the transfer from San Diego State, backing him up. I agree. I think Bills. Look, the wide receiving core typically is very good. They've had J.J. Arcega-Whiteside previous. They have Michael Wilson returning. He honestly had a pretty decent season early on before he got injured last year. The UCF game is standing out to me for some reason. They have Carter Wennington, who's returning. They have Simi Fehoko, who's also. So the wide receiving core is back intact. They have Osiris St. Brown, Amon-Ra's brother. He's actually the backup, I think, in the Y for them. So they have some talent at the skill positions. Defensively, I have no idea what to expect. I don't care that Oregon's replacing a bunch of players. And that may be my bias. It may be because I have some side bets running on the season. I don't know. CJ Verdell's returning, 1,000-yard rusher last season. Travis Dye's. So the backfield's going to be great. I know that they're replacing a lot on the offensive line. Mario Cristobal, though, has proven that he is very good at building offensive lines, going back to his days as a line coach at Miami. So I'm confident that they could at least figure out something, especially if you look at the front sevens in the Pac-12. Outside of maybe Washington, I like what Cal has going on, but we need to see them on the field first. And USC, I don't know if front sevens are going to be that impressive in this conference. So even if they're replacing a lot of the offensive line, if they're not facing a ton of pressure up front and they have the talent in the backfield, I don't know if that's going to impact them that much. What it'll impact is Tyler Shuck and his ability to have time in the pocket. I know that they've been working with him about moving out of the pocket, about off-balance throws, about snap to release time. They want to make that quicker. But he's the starter. He beat out Anthony Brown. He beat out the freshman Jay Butterfield. He's the starter for this team. Jalen Redd returns. Micah Pittman returns. Johnny Johnson returns. So besides Shawan Johnson, the wide receiving core is there. Tight end, Cam McCormick got injured last year. He's going to start. They got Hunter Kampemeyer, who is a redshirt senior, also coming in. So I agree with you, Ryan. Look, they're replacing a lot. Diomo Dorlador opted out, is coming back in the backfield. Nick Pickett is back in the backfield once again. Yes, they don't have Brady Breeze, who is the Rose Bowl defensive MVP, but they have Verone McKinney, who is a very good free safety. So I'm not necessarily going to sit here and say that these opt-outs are detrimental to Oregon's success in the Pac-12. Is it going to be a challenge? Yes. But I do think that they have the depth. And look at the front seven. Did you see the picture of Justin Flo? Have you seen what Justin Flo looks like, Ryan? That dude is a monster. And with him and Kayvon Thibodeau up front, this team is going to still be, and Jordan Scott is returning. This team is going to be really good. That's just how I feel. Yeah, that's my piece.
I know. You seem very excited about it.
I miss football. I miss Oregon Pac-12 football. I'm just excited
right.
for it.
I get it. You're an alumnus too, and that's meaningful. And I agree with you. I think defensively up front, I think they're going to be the most physical football team in the Pac-12. I really do. Mario Cristobal, that the way he recruits, the way he coaches, they're going to be the most physical football team. They ended up being the most physical football team a year ago, and they beat a Utah team that I thought could not be out physical last year in that Pac-12 championship game. And they did it against a Wisconsin team that was super physical. They found a way to win it in the Rose Bowl. So I don't see why they won't be this year. There's a lot to replace offensive line wise. To replace five guys is huge. So in this conference, you're going to have to score. You're just going to have to score points, period. And if you're not able to score a lot of points, I think that would be the only thing that limits them, because otherwise I think they're as talented as anybody else in this conference.
I agree. Okay, so number 12, Oregon hosting Stanford, 4:30. That's an ABC game. That's going to be a fun game on the national TV slate. Who do you have in this game and by how much?
I got Oregon, and I'm just going to say by a field goal right now because I think they find a way to get it done and come out on top in a big game. ESPN's got it. Herb Street, Fowler, Maria Taylor, they're all going to be there. Should be fun to see the Pac-12 on opening weekend.
Are you worried that we're going to lose the big three to Monday Night Football? Because apparently they're killing it, man, on Monday, when they call those back-end Monday Night Football games. I'm worried that ESPN is going to slot them there and we're going to lose the big three for college football.
I wouldn't be surprised if they did both.
Really?
Yeah. They did it to do that the other night. You know, they called the Saturday night game and then they called the Monday night game. If they're that good, and they are, and people appreciate it that much, I don't see why ESPN wouldn't do something like that. They're really good at what they do. So is Steve Levy and Brian Griese and Lewis Riddick. But I think a lot of people knew that this year was kind of a placeholder, hoping for something to happen a year from now. But over at NBC, I think, you know, you're a play-by-play guy. Al Michaels, you know, is
Mike Tirico is being phased in.
He is, because Al's just, you know, there's some Lee Corso to him, right, where you love him. And
but he's on the back nine.
I'm watching, and there's some mistakes, and he's just not seeing the game like he used to. And that's nothing against him, right? I mean, it's not ageism either. It's just, you know, we get older, and it's not the same. And Tirico is great. So I assume it's going to be Tirico and Drew Brees here in about a couple years.
Ooh.
Rolling around. That's why NBC hired Brees. They were going to phase him in Notre Dame games and then take over for Collinsworth. So I that's probably where that's going to go. But I would really miss Kurt and Chris calling those games on Saturday nights. And I don't think they will. They're in college football, and if they do go to Monday Night Football, it would be because they're that good and they can do it.
They are that good and they can do it. It's just about the decision making at this point. But I completely agree with you. And I mean, look, Al Michaels, it's how I felt with Kevin Harlan calling NBA games in the bubble. I think that Kevin Harlan now, his strengths are football. I think that he's sort of, you know, I don't think his basketball is that strong anymore. And I feel the same way about Al Michaels and his football. And it's sad. We love these guys. But Al Michaels is Southern California. Actually, he was technically born in Hawaii. Went to high school in Southern California. Great story. Hamilton High School, all that good stuff. Okay, Oregon, I agree with you. You have Oregon by a field goal. The Ducks like to do this. The Ducks like to do this in the opening game of every season. It sucks that this is a Pac-12 game, too, because that makes it even more... it makes it even tougher, I would think, because these conference games, man. I agree. I think that Oregon wins by a field goal, but you're right. Both teams have to score points. At the end of the day, both teams have their skill position players, with the exception of Oregon and Tyler Shuck returning the season. Maybe 38-35 Oregon, maybe 35-32. I think maybe we'll see a pick six, maybe a fumble here or there. I think that something defensively will happen. But I agree with you. I give Oregon a field goal chance right now. What's the spread on that game?
I think it's relatively low. Oregon's 11, favored by 11.
So. Oh yeah, that's too high for me.
Yeah.
All right.
Too high for just unknowns for me. So yeah.
Yeah, we need sample size. All right, let's move over up the I-5 around 60 miles northwest, or actually northeast of Eugene's Corvallis. Research Stadium, with its beautiful renovations, will be hosting your Cougars of Washington State. It's the young coaches, Rolovich taking on Smith. I'm excited to see what Rolovich does up at Washington State because of how he led Hawaii to their Mountain West, their inaugural Mountain West championship last year, their first one ever. But I don't know if he's going to get it done in his first season as a Pac-12 head coach. So I honestly think Oregon State is going to win this game. I think they're an exciting team. I think, yes, they're replacing Jake Luton, but they got Jamar Jefferson returning. They got some of their defensive, big defensive guys returning. They have a couple of decent transfers. I think their quarterback is from Nebraska, went to Calabasas High School out in the valley out near you. But I think Oregon State wins this game, and I think they actually win by maybe a touchdown.
Well, they're favored by 1.5, so you know Vegas thinks they're going to win as well. You know, Washington State's going to start a true freshman, first time ever in the first game of the season that they're going to start a true freshman. Rolovich recruited Delora out of St. Louis High School there in Hawaii to go to Hawaii. He luckily got to coach him at Washington State. There's been a lot of up and down. You know, we'll see what this new offense looks like. They have a great running back. And in this kind of offense, in this run and shoot type of offense, running backs can have a field day catching the football and running the football. And I expect big things out of Max Borgi.
Yep,
now, Max. Saying all of that, I have no idea what this team's going to look like. Washington State was able to get it done with Mike Leach because it was a niche deal. He was able to recruit a different kind of player, and in the Pac-12, they were able to get it done. As you can see, it does not work everywhere else. It does not work in the SEC. And what's that going to look like? Are they going to be mediocre? Are they going to be a 3-3 team? I honestly would think a 3-3 start to Rolovich in his first year under extreme circumstances would be pretty darn good. I know that he's going to play the Apple Cup much differently. If you're going to – I texted him the other night, told him good luck, congratulations. He goes, I don't know what we got, but I do know we're going to fight. I know that for sure. And that means a lot. They're going to fight their tails off. And this is a great first game. Jonathan Smith is an up-and-coming coach, I really believe. This will be his third season. What he's been able to do in his first two, I think, is tremendous. Almost getting into a bowl game a year ago, that last-second loss to Washington State, keeping them out. Go Cougs. So I really think he's going to be looking for some payback here. And Nick Rolovich may be on the on the opposing end of that. I cannot not go with my Cougars, so I go Cougs by 3.
Okay, it makes me feel less bad about my Oregon analysis. No, I'm with you. I think Washington State always does some crazy stuff every year. 2 years, I guess now 3 seasons ago. Call me old. That big win against Oregon last year. I mean, we were all up until 12:30 watching them blow a crazy lead to UCLA. I mean, they always keep it entertaining, and I have no doubt that the Rolovich era will bring more of that. Oregon State, Tristan Jebbia, transferred from Nebraska. He was a McDonald's All-American in high school. Didn't play very much at Nebraska, but I think that this system, especially with Jamar Jefferson, who I think they're going to heavily rely on, he's going to play a lot better, especially, like you said, on the Jonathan Smith. Is there a ceiling on Is there a floor on Jonathan Smith at Oregon State? Because to me, if he finds a way, and who knows, like you said, this season is extenuating circumstances. But if he turns this team into a Holiday Bowl team or a Red Box Bowl team in the next two seasons, we'll call it, do other bigger schools take a look at this guy as a potential candidate, even though his roots are dug in Corvallis?
Yeah, I do. I do think they do, but I don't know. I don't know if he's the guy that leaves.
Interesting.
I don't think he's the guy that leaves. I think he's a guy that stays and builds and understands what winning looks like. He won there. He got to 10 wins. He took him to Fiesta Bowl. All right. So he knows what that place can be like when teams win like that. I don't think, I know coaches are ambitious, but he's always been a Northwest guy. He stayed there. He coached under Chris Peterson at Washington. I would not be surprised if he continues to stay at Oregon State, even if, bigger named teams and programs come a call him.
All right. So Oregon State hosting Washington State at 7:30 on Fox Sports 1. I have Oregon. You said you Washington State by a field goal. I'm going to give Oregon State a 6-point spread. What does Vegas think?
-1.5.
Okay. Oh, you said that. Okay. So Vegas and I agree on an Oregon State win. Last year, when the last time Ryan and I disagreed, he ended up in an Oregon polo. So we'll see what happens this year when they play each other. All right. The final game of the day, the other 7:30 game on ESPN, the main channel. Getting those eyeballs. Cal hosting Washington. Every year, Justin Wilcox's defense is underrated. Every year, he has one of the best defenses in the nation. Will they get off to a 1-0 start this season, Ryan Leaf?
Well, they lost their tackling machine in Evan Weaver. So that dude tackled everybody. He tackled his family. He tackled his grandma. He tackled everybody. They lost him, but you know, Jordan Kanashik the year before, right? This is what Wilcox does, and their ability to bring back guys that wanted to opt out, I think are huge. So Chase Garbers was the best quarterback on that football team when he was healthy. And if he's able to stay healthy, they found a way to beat this Washington team 2 years in a row. So they're favored by 1.5. It's in Cal. I don't think that's as meaningful. A lot of unknowns with Washington. Jimmy Lake down there, Chris Peterson gone. Pretty even game. I think in a game like this, physicality, a quarterback that is special coming back. I think Cal does it again for 3 years in a row. They start the season out and they win by, you know, they win by a field goal or a safety because their new tackling machine makes a play in the end zone.
Right now, Washington is projecting freshman out of Corona Del Mar High School, five-star quarterback Ethan Garbers as the starter.
Brother on brother crime.
Yes, sir. We will have some brother-on-brother football gridiron action this Saturday. Ethan Garbers, for those who don't know, Ryan and I argued about it prior to the podcast starting. But Ethan Garbers, 55 touchdown passes last year. He did have a five-star wide receiver in John Humphreys, who's at Stanford. He had a five-star tight end in Mark Redmond, who's at Washington.
I think that Ethan Garbers is awesome. The fact that he threw 55 touchdowns, that for me, high school stats for me, I could care less about. I mean, I get it, but it doesn't translate to being good. I think he's just going to be a very good quarterback. The touchdowns.
Yeah, but you know,
I threw eight touchdowns. Okay. So
yeah, but I'm I can sit here and say, oh, he's going to be a good quarterback, but I need something to back it up. So 72% completion percent.
No,
absolutely. Absolutely.
No, you can simply say what I see is a good quarterback. That's all.
Ryan,
you have to say.
I have a journalism. You have a journalism degree. You also have a journalism degree.
I love how you your recruiting. I could not
it's
tell
not,
you a thing about
no,
recruiting.
No, it's not about recruiting. It's about you also have a journalism degree, right? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So you are taught that in journalism you can't make statements based on opinion. You have to have facts to back. It's a thesis, right? We are putting together a thesis on. Yeah. Absolutely.
No.
Absolutely.
No. My credentials aren't.
What if we're wrong?
My credentials are being the Pac-12 Player of the Year and the first round draft.
Okay.
That's
so let's.
That's why I think he's going to be good.
So let's good, and I think he's going to be good because of the eye test, but also because his stats back up the fact that he was really good. So I have no reason to believe otherwise.
Yeah, but my staff didn't. Why was I going to
okay,
be good?
Okay, congratulations on being the anomaly, Ryan.
No, there's a lot of anomalies. Come on.
And there's not a lot. There's not a lot. Justin Fields was a five-star recruit. Trevor Lawrence was by the way, in Trevor Lawrence's recruiting class in 2018, he was number one, and then 2 through 10 were all from Southern California. All right, let's move on here. So Cal and Washington. Ethan Garbers, we both agree, is going to be very good. Ryan's credentials, obviously, as a player, far outwork mine, but I saw the guy a couple times last year, so I'm going to hold my head up.
He threw 55 touchdowns, everybody. He threw 55 touchdowns.
72% completion percentage over the course of his high school career.
38%.
Ryan, Ethan Garbers was a higher recruit than you were. There's a real,
Was he?
Yeah, man.
What quarterback was he in the country?
Ethan?
Yeah, nine or higher?
I'll get you his official number. Give me one sec.
Well, if he was nine or higher, you're right. But if he was over nine, then he wasn't.
Should we have to go into the errors and how the quarterback is now more recruited and all this good stuff? He was actually he was number four. He was number four.
Really? In the country?
Yeah. Number four pro quarterback in the nation.
Oh, they go by pro now, don't they?
I mean, I'll look at his overall for you.
I wasn't a pro
compare.
Quarterback. I was an option quarterback in high school.
Get out of here.
Yeah. The most passes I attempted in high school was 10 in
a
game.
That's ridiculous to me.
I was speedster. I ran so fast. You couldn't see me.
That I believe, especially hearing some of your basketball stories. All right.
Cal wins.
So I agree with you. I think that Cal wins. I think that Ethan Garbers is going to be fantastic. He's going to be on the back end of what will be the rising class of quarterbacks coming out of the Pac-12. I think Tyler Shuck will be really good, but I think it's going to be led by Keaton Slovis and Jaden Daniels. So we have USC over Arizona State, Utah over Arizona, UCLA over Colorado, Oregon over Stanford, Oregon State over. So we have one road team winning this week in the slate of Pac-12 games.
I have Washington State winning on the road. So.
That is true. We disagreed. Okay, you have two road teams. I have Oregon State in that game. I have one road team. Go Ducks. Ryan, final words here as we sign off.
I'm so glad to be doing Pac-12 football again. It's like in our wheelhouse. Good to see you. You know, we got 7 weeks of this. Let's make the most of it.
And who knows, maybe if there's an undefeated team and some crazy stuff happens in the Big Ten and the ACC, maybe we have 8 weeks of this. Looking forward to it, Ryan. Great start. We will be back next week for more Believe in the Pac-12. We will break down this upcoming Saturday's games, and we'll also give you a preview of what to look for in week 11, but week 2 of the Pac-12 slate. For Ryan Leaf, I'm Jonathan Rifkin. I'll be back tomorrow with Just Recruiting with Jonathan Rifkin. Until then, everybody stay safe and thanks for listening. Please rate, review, and subscribe to the show on all listening platforms.
Thank you for listening to Believe. You can show support to your host by subscribing to the show and giving us a 5-star rating on your preferred platform. Check us out at Believe.com and search for BLEAV on YouTube.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.